Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. If you're stuck at home because of the COVID self-imposed lockdown, you might want to try putting that backyard to work and maybe get some food production to boot. Fall gardening season isn't that far off, and now is the time to get started. David Rodriguez is here to answer your questions about gardening and getting your garden green, getting your lawn green. He is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Bexar County. David Rodriguez, welcome back to The Source.
Hey, David. Thank you for inviting me back. And it's hot right now. July and August is traditionally the two hottest months of the year. But, you know, we just got to be very careful and effectively on how we water and, you know, plan, because, like you said, fall is just around the corner here.
We could be getting some rainfall pretty soon.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. We need it. We need it.
Let's go to one of our voicemails. This is Tipper.
Hi, my name is Tipper, and I wanted to know what I could add to my soil other than water to help sustain a healthy composition throughout the hot summer. Thank you.
So, David.
Yes. Well, mulch, be it landscape plants that are out there in your landscape or even those container plants on your patio. And normally we say two, twice a year, typically around early May, and again coming out of the heat of August around early to mid-September, put a 2-inch layer of a good mulch. And one of my favorite, which is a renewable resource here in our backyard basically, is a double shredded hardwood mulch with some compost. We can call that a living type of a mulch. And at least 2 inches away from the crown of the plant. And that will not only aesthetically look good, it's going to help hold moisture in, but it keeps the weeds down and it regulates soil temperature. So when we feel like it's 106 heat index out there, you know, you put a soil thermometer right under that mulch layer into that soil profile, it's 80 degrees. So mulch is really the best thing for us to do.
You can get free mulch from the city. You can drive up, as I have done, to the Bedders Brush site and right off of the Wurzbach Parkway and drive up in your pickup truck, and they will they'll fill it with mulch.
Yes, so all you need is a CPS energy bill, and you want to make sure you tarp the truck or the trailer, and they have a coarser material, and then sometimes you can ask for the finely shredded material, and they might give it away free, but otherwise they charge a very, very nominal fee for the finer material. And then to help decompose that coarser material, you can always feather a little bit of good compost on that as well.
Now, adding to your soil, what you're really looking for is micro little organisms that are they're going to be chewing down the organic matter and breaking it down so that your plants can have that material so they can feed off that. I've
Correct.
Heard that maybe adding a packet of sugar to maybe like a 5-gallon bucket of water or whatever when you put into the garden, and that will activate, maybe like you activate yeast when you make bread or something, that will help your garden just kind of give it a little boost.
Yeah, any sugar component, be it molasses or any sugar component, it's like when we wake up in the morning or at noon, you know, we drink a cup of coffee or we drink a soda, you know, that kind of boosts us up, and that's kind of the same feeling that the soil has for the microbial activity. But since the predominance of soils that we have is a clay calcareous type soil, and our parent material is limestone, very high buffered pH here, and we lack organic material in the soil here. Anytime we can mulch the top, and then when we plant, work in some real good high-grade compost, no more than about 20% with the native soil to help build that. That's not only going to help build the soil over time, help hold moisture, but that will kind of increase and benefit the microbial bacterium as well as the good fungi in the soil, definitely as well.
Let's go to the calls. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you have a question for David Rodriguez, he's with the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service here in Bexar County. And we have, let's see if we can get David on the line. And David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Dave. Thanks for being on the show. I grew years ago. I'm up here in Bernie, and years ago I grew a whole bunch of avocado seed. Anyway, long story short, one survived over the years and is trying to thrive. And I guess my question is the care for this, it's about a 6-7 foot tall tree now. Is the care for it the same as basic, like basic trees or plants? I'm a nursery consultant, so I know about doing this, but the avocado, I don't know. I don't specialize in avocados.
And you grew this from a pit, from the store?
I grew this from the store, from the seed, yeah.
All right. David Rodriguez. So
if you look at inner areas, older neighborhoods inside San Antonio, like in 410 and the deeper, older neighborhoods, you see some microclimates, and great-grandma or your tia planted a seed from a grapefruit or a citrus or an avocado. They might have started it in a little container and sized it up and decided one spring to find a little location out in the landscape. And 20 years or so later, man, we got some pretty cool avocados and grapefruit and things like that. So the challenge that we have, once you go past the 1604 corridor, particularly north, is the lack of deeper soils, and then we have the cold challenge, you know, the sensitivity of these tropical-type fruits. The other thing is juvenility. So when we start a citrus from a seed, it takes a while, and any fruit from a seed takes a while to get through the juvenility phase. So most of the ones that you purchase have tested the test of time, and they're grafted. So we're bypassing the juvenility stage to get into production much earlier. The other issue is the genetics. The squirrel plants the pecan, and the tree grows, and 8-10 years down the line has a nut. But the genetics starting from the seed from that mother is very heterozygous, so it's not going to be true to type. So that's why grafting plays a big, big part of getting the right graft for our soils and our roots. So this issue of starting an avocado from a seed, if you can keep it well watered, well fertilized, and have a microclimate, then you can go ahead and plant it in the ground and see what it does. Just protect it when it gets to cold.
All right, I got a lot of avocado questions for you, David Rodriguez, when we come back from the break. If you've got a question for him, call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. With us today, David Rodriguez from the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service for Bexar County. David, I got some questions about avocados. I've been playing around quite a bit with them. So have you ever tried that deal with putting the toothpicks in an avocado and putting in a cup of water and maybe the roots will grow? Ever try that?
Yeah, that's the same principle, David. Starting an ivy that you make a cutting. The challenge that we have, and is the roots that grow in the water is kind of like a hydroponic type of a root. And then when you put it in a media or a good premium potting mix, that plant has to rejuvenate a specific root for the potting mix that it's going to be grown in. So, yeah, it works. But if we can direct seed in containers and root these plants in containers, you'll bypass a step and you'll get the establishment a little bit faster, a little bit quicker that way.
At the Spanish Governor's Mansion downtown, they have a poncho avocado tree that's been there for at least 50 years. So, but that's the microclimate.
Yeah, right across Penner's, you have the Governor's Palace right there. And then back in the 80s, I think 85 and 86, they had much more than that one that's still there. And all those, basically, when we had those unusual hard winter in 85, 86, all those died except that one. And it, you're right, it's 30 feet plus. It does have avocados. The challenge is the fruit are very, very, very high up there. And then a few years back at the Basilica at Little Flowers, they used to have a nice, beautiful specimen right next to the building, a deeper soil microclimate right next to the building of the Basilica. And then the boiler room was there for the extra heat. And the Padres used to, on the second and third floor, they used to get those avocados, and they're unbelievable taste. But unfortunately, that tree passed away a couple years ago.
So what would be a good, there's different types of avocados, different breeds. People are familiar with the Haas. That's the avocado you most likely will get from the grocery store.
That's correct.
There are other types. Which one would you recommend? If someone wanted to find one at a local nursery or order one online, what would you pick?
Yeah, I would prefer going to your local nursery, independent preferably. And Bill Snyder and Divine Avocados really did a lot of legwork to get this going. So the amount of avocado plants that are sold the last 3 years at the nursery is unbelievable. And a lot of those are grafted hybrids. They're usually a Mexican selection bred with a Guatemalan. Mexican selection for the cold hardiness, or a little bit more cold hardiness. Guatemalan for the flavor and the quality of the fruit. So all the years down the line, I think right now the best one that I think is really one of the best for our market right now is called Joey. And Joey looks, the quality of the meat inside is similar to a Haas. So it's not just big seed in there. It has meat in there. And it's smooth skin, almost purple, blackish, leathery in appearance compared to Haas. So it's not going to have big-time shipping qualities as Haas or storage, but this is for the backyard gardener. The skin as well as the fruit inside it, both of it is edible. So you can eat both the skin and the fruit. Now, a good way that you really, really want to look for the cold hardiness of the genetics that you buy with the other selections that might be available at the nursery is get the new leaves. The new leaves, you pinch them, you break that new leaf. That new leaf should have a star anise or a licorice, strong fragrance. The stronger that fragrance in it, the more hardier genetics that has been built into that plant for winter hardiness that we need here. So that's a good rule of thumb to look at. But Joey is one of the ones that I really favor at this time.
The Divine Avocados, is that still in operation?
Yeah, Bill Snyder, you know, Divine typically has a little festival, and he's Bill Snyder is involved, and he plays around with them, but it's not like it used to be 10, 15 years ago.
Have you seen Jerry Sadler's avocados?
I'm not familiar with them.
Oh yeah, he does a lot of YouTubes, and he does some appearances at the nurseries every once in a while. Let's go to another caller. Let's see here. Let's go with Omar. And Omar, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, David. Quick question. So I have a garden out in the Hill Country west of San Marcos, and I was just curious, for the fall, is it possible to start up a garden for the fall, and what kind of stuff would you recommend growing? I know there's a lot of limestone that I've dealt with there, but just kind of curious.
Yeah, definitely. So we can vegetable garden 12 months out of the year. So our spring garden typically finishes up right around mid-June and 4th of July weekend. So July and August is always a challenge with the heat. But people start their fall tomatoes as early as the 4th of July weekend and start setting out multiple plantings, typically mid-July through the month of August, no later than early September. So we have how to pot them up, the process, on the plantanswers.com website under the rodeo tomato. So kind of use that as a guideline. So for sure, when we're planting these warm season crops for July and August, no later than mid-September, be it tomatoes and peppers and eggplant, you know, fresh transplants, we want to start out with a quality plant. If we can size them up for 30 days in larger containers, that will definitely help. But you want to make sure that you plant in an area that has drip irrigation, because it's so, so hot. And when you plant directly on drip irrigation, you're planting kind of like an IV, right on the orifice of that drip or on a wet spot. So that plant is constantly getting moisture. Some people will put a little shade structure, maybe get a little structure and put a little shade on the western part of that transplant. But if you start out with a quality transplant that's been acclimated from the nursery, just the watering is the key, as well as proper nutrition will help definitely.
The coronavirus pandemic has thrown the asylum process into disarray. Migrants who could have had a legitimate claim are being expelled in the name of public health.
They have been basically pushed away from the United States with no process whatsoever.
Next time on Fronteras, we investigate expulsions as witnessed on the Texas-Mexico border and Mexico City. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about gardening. Right now it seems hotter than Hades, because it is, but soon it'll cool off, and it's a perfect time to garden during the fall gardening season. And we're joined by David Rodriguez. He's here to answer your gardening questions. He's with the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. He is the agent for Bexar County. David, we had some technical issues. Sorry about that. I have an email from Judy. I have three raised bed gardens, 6 by 6 feet each. Unfortunately, an empress tree, which I did not plant and would chop down in a minute if my husband would let me, has grown and shaded these beds. If one of the beds I can grow parsley and sage nearly year round, any suggestions for what I can plant in the other two beds, both of which have full sun in November?
Okay, and I guess she wants to do herbs and vegetables. So, if you want to do going to September, October, you know, we can grow a heck of a lot more fall and winter vegetables here than we can in the springtime. So a lot of the trees, particularly folks that have bigger trees on the older areas inside 410, when they're pecan and other trees lose their leaves, they can grow a lot of good winter vegetables. September and October would be the first two waves of transplants, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, collards, Brussels sprouts, any of those should do fine. And try some root crops as well, carrots, radishes, beets, turnips. So a lot that you can consider planting there. And usually we get a little bit more sunlight when trees lose their leaves at that time of the year, so they should do fine there.
All right, let's go to a caller, Seth. And Seth, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. Thank you for your time, Mr. Rodriguez. I just moved here from Georgia, and it seems like the climate is a little bit similar. But are there any books that you could recommend that I could pick up that would be a good resource for me to have?
All right, and David, you were also doing, you're doing an appearance somewhere or soon, I mean this week or what?
So I guess, I guess he's talking about vegetable gardening. So a couple considerations is one of the best books, without a doubt, that a great mentor of mine used to be in my position in the 60s and then went to Texas A&M to be department head and extension head of the horticulture department, was Dr. Sam Cotner, a great, great gentleman. And his book called The Texas Vegetable Book, I think, is a must for every home vegetable gardener. And you can go to Texas Gardening Magazine and order it online from their bookstore there. Go to the Bexar County Extension Service, Bexar County Extension Service website. Under the horticulture section, we have both the vegetable spring and fall guideline vegetable list. And also on the homepage of the Bexar County Extension Service website, we've been doing a lot of webinars. I'll be doing a webinar on the 28th of this month on getting your fall and winter vegetable garden ready. And then we'll have another one in August of what to plant. So we have a lot of webinars that we've been recording with the challenges that we've had with COVID, but we've been learning a lot, having a good time. And then, of course, Aggie Horticulture has a wonderful vegetable section, as well as plantanswers.com, those two websites. And then get to know your local nursery. Now, we have a lot of old nurseries that have been around a long time. Fanix, Milburgers, the Garden Center on Bandera, the Two Rainbow Gardens, etc. And they carry the right plants at the right time and work with a Texas-certified nursery professional as well. But a lot of resources out there. Welcome to Texas, and we'll get you on the right path for a successful garden this fall and winter.
Another caller. Let's go to Mary. And hi, Mary. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air with David Rodriguez. Go ahead.
Hi, David. And David, thank you so much.
Yeah.
I know you're going to talk about water and best time to water, so I'm not going to ask that question. And also, my big thrill right now are the Mexican bird of paradise, which are doing beautifully. And I believe that's kind of a new plant for me to see in the last 10 years. So I'm interested in hearing about that particular plant, and I will wait to hear your answer.
All right, David. So let's go ahead and go over watering in the Mexican bird of paradise.
Okay. So watering, remember, people waste water, not plants. But we try to really conserve water 9-10 months out of the year. Bank it as best we can. Plant the right plants, native as well as well-adapted plants. Proper soil preparation, placement of the plants. Mulch, 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 all that's going to help. So right now, as a rule of thumb, an inch a week of supplement irrigation, and then hopefully we'll get a good rainfall this weekend to really help us go through another 2 or 3 weeks. That's a good rule of thumb. Yeah, Mexican bird of paradise, the extension horticulturalists really helped put that on the market. And you're right, it's been about 10 years or so, and Color Spot Growers locally is the main source that it all started out locally for the state. So it's a beautiful plant, loves the heat. We used to plant a lot of oleanders here on the highway before oleander blight took a lot of them out, so it's kind of a replacement for it. So if you want to learn more about Mexican Bird of Paradise, we have information archived both on plantanswers.com and the Texas Superstar website off of Aggie Horticulture. And like any perennial plant, when we cut these to the ground, March 1st, they can come out in the springtime. And
okay.
We don't do that no later than September 1st.
So I have an email from James, David, and this is, I am a new homeowner inside 410. I want to plant a mature tree in the front yard. What types do you recommend? What level of care is required? And I'm adding this, what time of the year is this a good idea?
Well, container trees, as long as you start out with a quality tree and a good balance of a shoot-to-root ratio, so bigger doesn't mean better on a shade tree. You can plant containers any time of the year, but, you know, if you plant this time of the year in July and August, if you miss one major watering, that's not going to be forgiving, and it's going to stress the tree. So ideally, we refer to fall is for planting. So typically from about mid-September to about mid to late November would be a great, great time to research and find out what type of tree that you want. Our sister agency, the Texas A&M Forest Service, has the best source of researching the trees for our area. So do Texas A&M Forest Service Tree Selector. You put your county and or zip code, and it's going to make you think, which we need to do on trees, how much space do I have? And I ask you other probing questions, and it'll come with the best recommended list. And then get a good tree. It doesn't have to be a big, big tree. As long as you plant it correctly and maintain it, you'll be surprised how fast some of these trees grow. Mexican live oak, or what we refer to Monterey oak, is one of the best trees of the newest introduction. Cray myrtles are awesome, especially that big, pretty pink one you see around town. Called Basham's Party Pink, just to name a couple.
They're pretty hardy. They're pretty tough to kill. And also, yeah. You have to think about when you get the tree, if it's root-bound. If you can talk
Definitely.
About that, what does that mean?
Definitely. So when we buy trees, we always look up canopy healthy, but a good balance of root system. So you don't want too big and then a small root system. So you need to pop it out of the container. Examine those roots. They should be nice and white and fibrous. And if they're really intertwined or girdled in appearance, then we need to massage that root ball, open it up, open it up, open it up, make an X about an eighth of an inch with a sharp instrument on both sides of that root ball to help rejuvenate that root system into its new environment. Because most trees that are stressed or underperform are planted too deep in the ground. They don't have a good root system to start out with, or that root system is girdled. So, you know, if we can wait till the fall, source the trees now until then, study up on what the best species would be for your particular situation, then you'll have the best long-term success.
Okay, let's go back to the phone lines with Annette. Annette, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. This year I decided to use raised beds. I have 2 4x4 raised beds. The bottom base I filled with hay before I put the soil on it. And I'm having a terrible time with roly-polies or pill bugs. I'm going to have to pull out 3 squash plants that have been eaten up by the pill bugs. So my question is, I've tried diatomaceous earth. That didn't seem to make much of a dent. I tried baiting them with some fruit, and I feel like I've pulled out hundreds of roly-polies, but there's still a lot. So what else can I do so that I can continue planting in this bed? And can I use this soil next year, or will those roly-polies still be there?
Yeah, the pill bugs, the pill bugs or sow bugs, roly-polies tend to come when it's a wet spring. We saw a lot of them, and we're still seeing them at this time. So they're really, old literature says they don't really mess with the plants, but when they're very, very abundant, I've seen them really strip down new seedlings of squash, green beans, and things like that. So Try to use drip irrigation, water much more efficient instead of, and then coarse material. If you have a lot of coarse decaying mulch or leaf material, they tend to be higher populations. So that's another thing to look at as well. There's an organic approved insecticide for roly-polies, snails, and slugs called Sluggo Plus. That works very, very effective, and you can use it around edible crops, and we always read and follow label instructions. People even make beer traps. You get a mason jar and kind of heal it into the ground, put some the beer. I think that's a good waste of beer, but you put that little bit of beer in the bottom of that, and it acts as a trap, and that will really, really get down the their population big time. Sluggo Plus and the beer traps. And then, yes, you can reuse that material, but every time you do major spring or fall planting, you want to the decomposition and the breakdown of that material, you tend to have to replenish it with either some more finished compost or some good garden soil that has a good amount of compost. And the key for fall vegetable gardening is not only planting the right plants at the right time, good quality seed and transplant, the right varieties, but nutrition. You really, really want to lace the area with pre-plant granulated fertilizer so you can start the race and finish it with quantity as well as quality yields at the end.
So I'm wondering about this, David. Every healthy garden is going to have a few pill bugs in it. And if I see some pill bugs going around doing their thing, that's not a reason to run to the store and buy some Sluggo. But there comes a point where they seem to be overpopulated and they go beyond what they normally do, which is eat old dead organic material, old dead plants and leaves, and move on to live ones. They'd rather eat the dead stuff than the live ones, right?
That is correct. They're part of the process of breaking down organic material. Are decomposing unless there's extreme numbers out there. They don't go to the new foliage, but I have seen it in the past where they've just beans or zucchini or squash seedlings that have just germinated out of the ground. I've seen them completely devour those, but that's a rarity. That's a rarity to see that.
More likely you're going to get, I mean, where's like a moth that will put like a, And a grub that goes into a squash.
Yeah, squash vine borer on zucchini and squash. That's correct.
And so I've seen people like dig those slugs out and they're able to save the plant.
Yeah, people will mud them up or put some dirt soil on it. I've seen people go as far as get a old clothes that you hang your clothes on. And go in there and remove the grub. But usually, if you keep the plants healthy and plant extra plants, usually it starts showing the decline at the end when you've already harvested a tremendous amount of yield already.
I have an email question from Natalia. I accidentally overwatered my indoor plectanthus, and now the leaves are going brown, falling. What can I do to save it?
Well, consider letting it dry out some. If it has any green in the stems, that means there's life still in the plant. If it's brown, then it's done, moved on. Either way, then you would want to strip off the real bad leaves, cut it appropriately to the green wood to encourage it to possibly leaf out again. And then just be a little bit better on watering, consistent on watering. If you need to lightly upgrade it into a little bit larger container, go ahead and do so. And, of course, any container plant, indoor or outdoor, you know, when we water all the way around the container till it sufficiently drains from the bottom, and then we never let the water stagnate on the saucer or basin for any period of time.
All right, we're taking another break. When we come back, we're going to hear questions from Benjamin and Linda. If you have a question for David Rodriguez, the number is 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're taking your plant and gardening questions with David Rodriguez, the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension agent for Bexar County. The number to call in is 833-877-8255. Let's go to Benjamin to get his question on the air. Benjamin, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to ask about tile irrigation. I mean, would it be worth it, and would it be sustainable in our area? Thank you.
All right, Benjamin, thank you for that. So irrigation, I know there's a lot of people who put up little tiny hoses and do drip irrigation systems.
David Rodriguez. Yeah, when you do vegetable gardening, particularly for warm season crops going in the ground in the month of July, August, early to mid-September, drip irrigation without a doubt is very crucial. You know, you never plant on dry soil, and you never set out transplants that are just out of the greenhouse to the full sun. You need to acclimate them and make sure they have adequate moisture. So that's very important. So when you use drip irrigation, you're mudding in the plant. So you're planting on a wet spot, and you're keeping it very moist to get it through the heat right now. So it's like an IV on a plant, and then mulch is going to help hold that moisture in as well. So use the orifices, the drippers. They usually have holes every 12 inches on those lines. I do not believe in soaker hoses for landscape plants or vegetable garden. The problem with soaker hoses is reused tires, and you get very, very inconsistency on how the irrigation is applied out there, and basically sweat off the hose. When you water, you know, you want to get the water right at the root system. The Israelis, without a doubt, have done the best with drip irrigation on the desert situation. They're even sending extra food to Europe at this time, so that says a lot. So study up on drip irrigation. We have more information both on the plantanswers.com and Aggie Horticulture website as well.
Many, many years ago, there was an Israeli experimental farm down on the border in Webb County, and it did amazing work. It was a program that Hightower did when he was an AG commissioner in Texas. And then when he was voted out of office, that program went away. But that was fantastic. Had you ever been out there for that?
No. Crazy. Yeah, Commissioner Hightower started the Go Texan program, and then started a lot of the entrepreneurship and specialty crops for Texas, and then what we already had going. So yeah, you're right, that was a pretty awesome program that was started, and we lost a lot of that to date, unfortunately. But yeah, the Israelis, you know what they do to feed their nation and then have surplus to ship into Europe, a vegetable and fruit growing on a desert, they are without a doubt the best of the best when it comes to irrigation efficiency and micro irrigation and drip irrigation. So yes, it's awesome what has been accomplished. And you know, water, you need water to grow food, fruits, vegetables, animals, animal husbandry. So we got to use this water very smart, very wisely, but most important, very efficiently. And drip irrigation does that for vegetable gardening.
Let's go to Linda on the phones. And Linda, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, I have four raised beds, and I've used cinder blocks for my border. The soil that I use in the beds is dried manure, peat moss, and vermiculite. Two of the beds are fine. The other two beds, I get this mold that is a brown, orange, yellow type of thing. So I want to know what's going on with the two beds that get the mold.
All right, Linda, thank you for the question.
It probably has to do something with the decomposition and the original material use. So every time you plant spring and fall, keep cutting it with some real high-grade manure-based compost that's aged and correctly, not hot. And work that in, because, you know, anytime you use organic materials with these raised beds, particularly coming out of the summer heat, it breaks down and decomposes. So keep adding. I like to use a cultivator for that situation. Our water, the quality water and the organic material tends to cake like you're describing there. So you can either use a three-prong or four-prong hand cultivators. I like the long-handled one so you're not bending down on your knees. And just like a farmer cultivates his field for not only weed management, but to till that top that tightens up with the heat and that material, it helps the air, the oxygen, as well as gas exchange in the soil profile and the rain when you water or when it rains. So just cultivate it every so often, and that shouldn't be an issue long term.
We have a voicemail from Ursula, and let's give it a listen.
Hello there. This is Ursula Sanderson. And my question has to do with planting a tree, more specifically a Texas ash or a mountain laurel in the Kendall County area, a little bit northwest of Bernie. I'm wondering whether it's appropriate to do that at this time of the year. And I look forward to hearing your counsel on this.
Okay, David Rodriguez.
Okay, so good quality container trees can be planted any time of the year. Of course, the challenge is July and August. If we miss one good watering, that's going to stress or possibly kill that tree. So if we can wait till the fall time when temperatures night and daytime have cooled down, you'll have less stress on the tree. But fall is really the ideal time to plant. So start getting a game plan for the best species of tree for your area. Start sourcing it early, but I would definitely probably plant it in the fall time.
We talked about the root bound situation a little bit earlier. Have you seen or heard much about this root air pruning way of potting the plants?
Yeah, some of our local growers have been using that, and there's different forms. One of the standard form would be the larger tree specimens that they grow. They basically grow a container within another container. So the roots, when they bypass that, they don't girdle, and they go less of a shock. So that's one way to look at it. You know, bare root trees, fruit and shade trees used to be the standard many, many, many years ago, particularly during the winter months. Very, very, very few nurseries sell bare root fruit trees or shade trees anymore. But some of these arborists and landscape contractors are starting to plant in the fall and winter time, and these containers that are often two top-heavy trees, a small root system, roots that are girdled, they're basically starting to bare root them again, taking all that mix, artificial mix off them, do selective root pruning, and resetting them when they're dormant in the landscape. And, you know, what was old many, many years ago, it seems like it's returning again.
Let's go to another caller. We have Ellen on the line. Ellen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. A couple months ago, or it was months back, we signed up for this Plant a Tree program in San Antonio, and we adopted a Mexican sycamore. About a month and a half ago, they planted it in our backyard, but it's dying. We're following the directions. Most of its leaves are gone. The ones it has left are brown. And I'm just wondering if you have any pointers on how we keep this plant alive.
Wow, keeping it alive, that's a tough one.
Yeah, so it was planted, you know, just right when the temperature started to go 90 degrees plus. And I presume that did you examine the roots and then how much water has the tree been receiving?
It was a crew from the city that took care of it. They came in and they did all the work. So, you know, it was in their hands during the planting process. And then they put this bag around it that we would fill up with water. And it gave us a set of instructions. And to be quite honest, my husband was following the instructions, so I couldn't tell you exactly how much water. But basically, it was watering every other day, I think, for the first week or 2 weeks, and then we slowly tapered off the watering. But we're still watering it because it's pretty hot out.
So Yeah. Those are gator bags, and I've seen so many trees around this area, these bags on it. But remember, it only works if we put water back in it. So what I would do is take those bags off and make a berm, a ring around it. Hopefully they did that when they planted, replenish that organic mulch. And with this extreme heat that we're having, you need to fill up that basin, that moat, that ring every third week from mid-June through mid-September, and fill it up. If it drains fast, fill it up a couple times. What it sounds like is simply not getting enough water.
But trees also need oxygen in the root system. And
that's
too
correct.
Much water can basically choke them out. If you buy these moisture probes, you can get them for less than $15. And you just and it's a long, like 18 inches. You can kind of dip it down into those, into the root system. Will that really give you an idea of what's going on down there, David?
Yeah, there's some different types that are out there. I usually tell people just dig a little bit underneath the mulch layer and get a big rod, you know, like an old golf club, and break the old golf club and break the tip off. And use that as a probe, you know, as a probe.
Yeah.
And what that does is like a toothpick in a cake. You feel the moisture come up. If there's no moisture, then you're not getting enough deep moisture down there.
Well, we'll be getting some moisture this weekend, we hope. We'll be watching the weather, and hopefully it'll green things up quite a bit. David Rodriguez, thank you so much. Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Bexar County. Great to have you on.
Yes, thank you. It's been fun.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.